You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Christopher Grimes. Christopher, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure. It's good to join you.
So, Christopher, let's see. We're talking on September 9th in 2020. We're still in the middle of the pandemic. Where are you now talking from? Because I imagine that's changed things a bit for you as well.
Well, in addition to the pandemic, we're in the middle of a firestorm in Big Sur and throughout California, as I'm sure you're probably aware. And we have evacuated for the last 2 weeks. We're just now back in our house. And still have helicopters dropping water up on the mountain behind us. So it's an interesting moment.
Yeah, a difficult moment. So I imagine it's hard to breathe there. That's part of what happens, right? I haven't been in areas when fires like that are raging or have raged, but there's a tremendous amount of pollution, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the smoke is really one of the big problems. And we're facing a shift in the wind from the north and now coming from the south tomorrow. And so that's a real challenge. But, you know, we moved up here about a year ago to Big Sur, and I had lived up in this area before, not in the Big Sur area, but in the Monterey area. And I was prepared for a change coming up from Los Angeles, but I have to say that it's been a pretty dramatic change, not only in the rural location where we're located, but and the projects that we're trying to develop from this location, but just in the kind of rural nature of being on the top of a mountain an hour away from any city.
Right. So let's talk about some of those challenges and exactly what you do. Christopher, you work with artists, but not the way a typical gallery does, or even corporate or residential consultant. You work on site-specific projects. Can you tell me a little bit about how the gallery started and how you got into that, or just how the gallery started, and then we'll move into what you're doing.
Sure. Well, we began the gallery in 79, actually up in the Monterey area, and then moved down to Los Angeles. And we had two or three different spaces, the last of which we were there for, I think, 22 years in Santa Monica. And the program has, I guess it started out as I think most programs did when gallerists were starting at that time, was more regional, and then it expanded into a fairly international program with a kind of a conceptual underpinning to most of what we were doing. And the evolution of what we're doing now began kind of out of a couple of different points of reasoning, one of which was the art world has changed pretty dramatically from the time that we had started. And I think I've always kind of hewn closer to the idealist side of things rather than the business side. And so the projects that we were developing, the exhibitions that we were developing, were shows that were personal in many respects. They were shows that I felt were important, that I wanted to realize for my own personal interests. And with the overarching thought in the background that if it was interesting to me, that it might be interesting to others. And so we ended up curating a number of exhibitions that then traveled to museums in Europe and South America. And yeah, I think being engaged on that level where you're on that level of creativity for me as a gallerist was what was interesting about what we were doing. And over the years, it just seemed that those priorities kind of shifted less from the kind of creative side of things if you will, and more towards the market-driven aspect of it, which is not news to anyone. But when you're in the trenches and doing this for as long as we had done it, it just, you know, it became more routine and more of a logistical undertaking rather than something that was creative where we were learning. And I think that the learning aspect of what we were doing was an important component to our enterprise. So, you know, the idea of signing another lease for another 5 years and continuing doing what we were doing just didn't seem to be as interesting to me. We weren't really discussing art as much as we were discussing which fairs you were doing and so forth. And we were doing a number of large-scale projects because a lot of the artists that we were working with were engaged in doing works that were much broader in scope or broader in scale and involved architecture. And architecture had always been an interesting field for me. And so we came up with the idea of having the program evolve into essentially an online endeavor that was not based on a site, and developing a program that could be more mobile, I suppose. So I've gone into partnership with my son, who is up in Seattle, and we're based here. I have another residence down in Los Angeles, so we kind of move up and down the coast. But we're able to be, I think, much more flexible and do projects that, for me, are more interesting from that creative side of things.
And you're talking specifically, of course, about site-specific works for architectural environments that are usually outdoors. Is that correct?
Not always outdoors. We've done projects for universities, museums, private corporations. It's kind of across the board. And I think one of the interesting things about, you know, moving into this domain, one of which was the fact that I had seen artists embracing ideas that were much more innovative in their approach, rather than, you know, the historical physical object on a pad somewhere. And it allowed us most recently to take on artists like Christine Corday and Bill Fontana. And Bill Fontana is a sound-based artist who I've followed for many years. He's out of San Francisco. And, you know, working with Bill, for instance, in a gallery situation was a much more difficult proposition than I think working the way that we're working now. So, for instance, we have a particular project that is, we've been developed a proposal for, which is similar to the Highline project in New York, and the idea of integrating a sound-based work that one would encounter in that environment is, to me, kind of an interesting departure from historically what you would encounter there. And I think that the Highline has addressed that in an interesting way. And there, I guess there are precedents for this. The Stewart Collection at UCSD is, I think, an unusual collection by virtue of some of the site-specific works that they've generated there on campus. Tim Hawkinson putting together a series of boulders to make a teddy bear that's maybe 40 or 50 feet high. John Luther Adams doing a sound piece that's based on the wind blowing through trees. Michael Asher developing a fountain that is kind of a generous gesture towards the student body. I mean, there's just different and interesting ideas that are around. And I think that that's one of the things that really drew us towards doing this. And I guess another example would be a project that we just finished in Washington, D.C. at a corporation that is a 35-foot gradient light box by a Brazilian artist named Lucia Koch. And it's in a three-story atrium that's visible from the street on the 20th floor of this building. And in addition or adjacent to that, to the light box, are a series of curtains that she developed for these glass conference rooms. And the curtains are very sheer fabric. It's a gradient fabric, like silk, as well. So there's a translucence to that. And there's a dialogue between the curtains and the light box. So these are, from my way of thinking, a little bit out of the ordinary from what you would anticipate. And I think that's what's exciting about moving this direction.
It is exciting. So tell me a little bit about how you work. You know, you're doing work that sometimes public art agencies do, like Creative Time or mm-hmm. Land in L.A., Los Angeles Nomadic Division. How do you differ from the way those organizations work? Because they're also at times doing kind of work with artists. And how do you approach it? And maybe it would help to just say how it's different from what those organizations do.
Well, generally speaking, our clients are approaching us, and I think we have the advantage of having been in business for 40 years and are kind of a known entity. And so oftentimes clients will approach us, whether it's advisors or developers or institutions, knowing some of the artists that we're working with and being interested in receiving a proposal from us. So it could be an airport, could be, you know, it's just really diverse. And at that point, if they're approaching us with a specific artist in mind, it's kind of a straightforward proposition. If not, then we can engage them and suggest something that might be appropriate given the condition or the circumstances.
And so to talk about one of those projects that you're invited to do. So in other words, because you have a history, different all the different universities and places invite you to help them mm-hmm. with creating something that they don't know exactly what it is, but they want some kind of architectural driven project that they have a space for. That's how it starts with a kind of space they have, and then if you could walk us through like how you select artists how that process starts happening.
A fairly recent project that we did was for Texas A&M for the engineering department. They had a 3 or 4 story atrium in the engineering department, and we were approached by an advisor who was interested in commissioning Inigo Manglano Ovalle to propose a work for that site. And Inigo's work is influenced by science, and so it seemed like a good fit in that regard. And he's also been an instructor for many years, so working in that academic environment was a very natural situation for him. So he proposed a work, two works, one of which was not as I think engaging as the second work. And the second work ultimately, which was accepted, was this work titled Prototype for a Stellar Interloper or a Silver Surfer, and it is a 40-foot-tall carbon fiber six-component element that was based or inspired by a binary system. And it has, and I should back up and say that Inigo's work, in addition to being inspired by science, climate, migration, and a myriad of other sources, or I should say formally through minimalism perhaps. Although the work is very conceptual in nature, it has a very kind of seductive component to it. And so this is it's difficult to describe, much better to see. but it is a very organic fluid structure that alludes to fluid dynamics and something that the engineering department, the student body within the engineering department, could contemplate and be engaged with. So this was a difficult project to realize. We used fabricators who were developing drones and, you know, for the military, and I mean, it's a very specialized type of fabrication. Then on top of this carbon fiber structure, he used an aluminum alloy leafing process, which is all done by hand. These 6-inch, what I guess are very reflective aluminum foil elements that are applied by hand over the entire structure. So it's a really unusual piece, and it's a work that I think addresses a number of the issues that were important, not only for its originality, and I could probably ground that in saying for me what's the most compelling about an artist's work is an ability to develop a language that's distinctly their own, so a quality of originality with some content that would ideally reveal itself over time, and kind of couch that in a formally seductive language. So those three components come together to make a work that we feel is successful. In this case, I think it was quite successful.
That is exciting. Well, that's it does sound like a, of course, that it is a complex process that's not easy to just jump into, clearly, because there are a lot of unknowns in research. Is there a project that you're currently involved in that you want to mention? I know it's hard to talk about unfinished projects, and we don't have to do that, but is there one that you're talking about?
We're developing a glass facade for a building in Culver City that is being developed by a German artist that we work with, Veronica Kellendorfer. And it's an image. She's always working with, nine times out of ten, she's working with modernist architecture. And coming from painting, she developed this process back in the early 90s of photographing particular components of well-recognized buildings by architects of renown, but paring it down to a particular formal quality within that building, rather than trying to reveal the building as a whole to identify with the architect. So it's more of a formal engagement with the modernist language. She takes this element. In this case, it's a Frank Lloyd Wright building that was developed by Schindler and enlarged it to a much larger scale. So it's the facade of the building. There are always photographs of glass facades of buildings. And she's transferred that in a silkscreen process onto glass. And she uses a glass powder with an oil-based medium when it's screened onto the glass, and that goes into an oven at 1,500 degrees, and so that image is fused onto the glass. So it's a color-fast process that is really quite flexible in terms of where the work is located, whether it's outdoors or, you know, in the sun. So this is a project we've been working on for about a year or so, and we hope to have it finalized by the end of this year, beginning of next. So the project that we're working with Christine Corday, it's actually a project that she began before our collaboration. It's the ITER project in France, which is about solar fusion or nuclear fusion as a new form of energy, and it's a science experiment that is ideally going to come to some form of conclusion, as I understand it, around 2026, if all the components go correctly in the assembly. But what she's done is she's fabricated a bolt that will anonymously be placed at some point within the building that is a gesture of art. I think there are 35 countries involved in this collaboration to develop a new source of energy. And her work is considered the 36th country, which is art. And so this is an interesting project that she's been involved with for some time, and it's just now getting to a point to where they're beginning to assemble some of the components to begin the experiment, which is a kind of a remarkable undertaking. So these
sure
are the types
is,
of things. My son is truly much more involved with this project than I am, but it's this kind of diversity in the approach of the different artists that we're working with that keeps this, I think, kind of engaging and exciting for us.
That is very exciting. And to remark on what you said earlier, so you wanted to enter the kind of conversation of the art world through a different lens, you were saying, which is why you kind of moved to this way of working. And, you know, as opposed to being market-driven, like you said, art fair-driven, this isn't driven by the same forces. And you're also working intimately with artists and doing things that, you know, will be around for decades or 100 years or more. Is there a specific kind of thinking of the word kind of, you know, joy or excitement about this as opposed to the kind of market-driven work? I can see this, what I can imagine would be the satisfaction in this kind of work, working with artists and developing these projects, but it's also a different conversation, really, that you're having, right? There's a different way of...
It is, and I think that we're engaged at a different level than we were doing exhibitions, and we would quite often be involved with fabricating works for exhibitions or fairs. I mean, it's a very natural kind of outgrowth, and I think much more so these days than in the past. But I think that this is, although it's a much more protracted process, it allows us to be engaged in a different level. And I think that the learning that goes along with this for, I think, all parties involved is one of the more compelling aspects of doing this work. I don't think I really conceived of the idea that that the program or that the works produced through the program would be more enduring. I mean, obviously, comparatively speaking, with a gallery, everything is really quite temporal, and you're only as good as your last show. And because there's so much more planning involved in these projects, and they are designed to last for quite some time, it's a different history that you're developing, and it's interesting looking back on what we did as a gallery, and which is really quite ephemeral when you think about it, and this is not. I mean, I'm sure not everything will survive, but hopefully there's a strong element of it that will.
Right. Yeah, it's wonderful what you're doing. I want to ask one more question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm rereading a book that I've read probably 3 or 4 times before, which is Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which is Shunryu Suzuki. I had come to Tassajara probably in the early 80s, and Tassajara is a Zen Buddhist monastery that is kind of 10 miles from where we live now. And one of the reasons that we moved back to this location, and it's well, it's difficult to talk about, frankly, but I can say that by being in this location, what we had hoped to do here was develop something that was unusual and distinct from anything that I had seen before. I'm looking forward to developing an artist residency program that will tie in with what we have, what we're working on the site-specific project basis. And so that's something that is kind of a work in progress and requires a lot of time and patience. And I think that that is definitely part of this, the process of being here. And when you think about the fires, as we're still watching helicopters drop buckets of water on the mountain across from us today, you think about change as being an intrinsic component within life and something you can always count on, and non-attachment. So as you load up your belongings in your car and drive away from your house, I think that that's something that's been on my mind a little bit lately.
Christopher, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you well with your future projects.
Thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.